Hey, everybody, it's Joe Trippi, and welcome back to That Trippi Show. Thanks to everyone who's downloaded our recent guest shows. But I want to take you back to 1989. Democrats were really struggling to win presidential elections. In the six elections between 1968 and 1988, Democrats won only once, Jimmy Carter in 1976. And during that entire time, we averaged just 42% of the popular vote. But we needed a strategic reset. At the time, a brand new group, the Progressive Policy Institute, commissioned a study by Bill Galston and Elaine Kmark that has since become required reading for Democrats. It was called The Politics of Evasion, and it helped give rise to the new Democrats and the strategies that got Bill Clinton elected in 1992. Now, with Trump looming over 2024 and Democrats still trying to formulate their strategy, they've updated the study, and I really think it's worth discussing. And we'll put it in the show notes. Everybody should read this study, this new updated one from the Progressive Policy Institute. Alex, tee us up. Where do you want to get into?
Yeah, it's really interesting. They re-released it earlier this year. It's called The New Politics of Evasion, and the subtitle's really interesting. How Ignoring Swing Voters Could Reopen the Door for Donald Trump and Threaten American Democracy. And you and I have been going back and forth on this for the last couple of days. What I found interesting is it's not just kind of let's look at what we did 30 something years ago, but it's now really looking at Trump and Trumpism as a threat to our democracy. And there's a ton in this that I think we definitely should talk about today.
Yeah, well, back then they said the risk was that I think George Herbert Walker Bush would be reelected. As dire as that may have been, this time it's democracy itself that's at stake if Democrats don't get what's not working and the need to reach out to swing voters again. They point out that today everybody thinks there's no such thing as a swing voter, when in reality, if you look at how close the results of Georgia and Pennsylvania and other places are, it just shows even if the swing vote is small, it's critical. It's right. Not just turning out your vote. We've got to build a bridge to working class white folks and others that used to be part of our coalition and bring them back.
So in broad strokes, Joe, what in this report or kind of what takeaways should we grab from this?
It's not just Kmark and Bill Galston. I worked with both of them, by the way, back in the Mondale campaign in 1984. This really is a progressive, thinking from, progressives in the party about what's wrong. They wrote a lot of what, would become sort of what Bill Clinton communicated to change the direction of the party and connected with working class folks. They wrote a lot of that in that study back then. I remember it and then saw it work as we won, in 92, 96.
The interesting part, and I'm gonna read a chunk from the initial 1989 report, and you tell me how relevant this still is.
I was there. They worked with me. I worked with them both in the Mondale campaign in 1984. So this is a lesson. And this, I'd come off progressives challenging Jimmy Carter, with Ted Kennedy in 1980. The party was clearly, and again, these were people who worked for Walter Mondale in 84. Certainly a liberal from Minnesota, from the progressive wing of the party. And it took them writing this in this first report they put out, study they put out. It really helped refocus the party to reconnect with its working class roots. And I think they're making the same case here that instead of looking at, you hear a lot of this today, we can't talk to these people. And I think I started early last year saying we need to start talking to right. rural voters, et cetera. Everybody's like, you can't talk to these people. Well, if we don't, we're having a problem because these are exactly the people that were the base of this party, that if the party starts to talk to them, keep our scorn down. I mean, the scorn against voters that aren't with us is not helpful. We've got to put lower the anger and talk to them reasonably. I'll give you an example. You know, what the Republican Party has done is convinced working class voters that, yeah, you're getting screwed, and it's because you're white. You know, Democrats, you're getting screwed, and it's because you're working class. The working class is getting screwed. Whether you're rural, suburban, urban, you know, the working class continues. It's more a class thing, not a race thing. And the Republicans make it a race thing, and then we fall right into the trap and fight them on it's a race thing. It's not. This is a party that stands for the working class, and it has you're not being hurt and penalized because you're white. It's because they keep the working class separated along race lines. And these are things that we need to start talking about, I think, and actually leave the race out of it and make the case purely on class lines, you know, tax breaks to the rich, the tax plan to tax, you know, want the Republicans, right, you know, running away from their tax plan that is in their tax plan, that is in their plan, their agenda, which is to tax everybody.
I'm really not sure whether it is or it isn't right now.
It is. But I'm saying it's to make it to, and I think that's one of the things that Biden was successful at during the campaign, is at least bridging with enough of those voters that they were the difference, obviously turning out people too, but they were the difference for him in places like Pennsylvania, Georgia, that made the difference in terms of him winning. It's to not abandon understanding that we have to go over after swing voters. And again, the scorn, to not treat those people with scorn, but to explain to them that there is a choice and that it's not the reasons the Republicans are telling you that. I mean, that's what the immigration fight's about. That's what, I mean, everything is about them being able to tell those folks that it's race, the immigrants, that they're all to blame, when in reality, it's they're giving tax breaks to the rich, and the working class people out there, regardless of color, are getting screwed.
Right.
Yeah, that's a much better message than getting into the fight on race.
So what year do you think,
which is what they want,
what year do you think this sentence was written? Too many Americans have come to see the party as inattentive to their economic interests, indifferent, if not hostile, to their moral sentiments, and ineffective in defense of their national security.
Well, that's now. I think that's now.
That was what they wrote in 1989, and I agree with you. It still rings true today. And then they said, instead of facing reality, Democrats had embraced a politics of evasion that ignored the electoral reality and impeded needed change. I mean, that gets to what you were just talking about. But I find it interesting that, look, there's a lot of really good new stuff in this study. And I think, like we said, we've been talking about it for a while, but it really passed his prologue with a lot of this stuff. Going through this, there's a ton of myths they point out that we really can't fall into these traps again. And we got to be really careful. Joe, I was thinking we could play some Mythbusters. How's that sound?
Sure, of course.
All right. So the first one that I think is much more relevant today, I mean, every day as we get closer to 2022, is Trump is fading or less relevant than he's ever been.
Well, I mean, look, that one's pretty obviously not true. If you look at any of these primaries recently, I think his endorsed candidates have won four of the five of them that he's endorsed. Mm-hmm. You look at it, you know, he got stronger in 2020, 11 million more votes than he got in 2016. Yes, Democrats turned out more votes too, But it, you know, it turns out, excuse me, that turnout is not blindly a good thing for Democrats anymore. You know, we saw this in 2020 in Alabama, you know, in the lower turnout election of 2017, Doug Jones wins in a massive presidential turnout, of course, in a state that's 68% Republican, ain't going to happen. Now, this is the same thing in a lot of these marginal, you know, battleground districts. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know,
North Carolina, Ohio,
and his people are energized by him. We've seen that. I mean, he can even, you know, get them to take out the U.S. Capitol, or, you know, or enough of them to almost steal the election. So I just think that one, it's clear and clear every day. He still owns the Republican Party. We see where, you know, you look at Joe Biden's approval ratings and where and how bad the Democratic brand is. And then, you know, start believing the myth that he's gone, he's finished, he's never coming back. That's a myth that we cannot buy that yep. into that one. That'd be a big mistake.
We'll get into more about kind of some of these swing voters and swing districts later, but one that is particularly relevant now, another myth is people of color think and act alike, which is a trap that national Democrats sometimes have a tendency to fall into.
Yeah, no, this is exactly right. And it's also why, you know, the term socialism has hurt Democrats, right? Because first of all, you've got, you know, younger progressives who don't, you know, who may have a different view of what the word means. But also, more importantly, when you look at the erosion that's happened, you know, with Democratic presidential candidates, you know, we got 71%, I think, of Hispanics in 2012, 66 in 2016, 59 in 2020.
Right. That's not erosion. That's like a cliff, man.
And it's all a lot of it has to do with large numbers of Cuban and Venezuelan refugees who see socialism as they experienced it. They hated it. They despise it. And then they are, you know, the Republican attack that we're all a bunch of social, et cetera, the ads that they were running in Florida on Latino and Hispanic radio and things like that. And then the communities, it's not monolithic. They're not the same as
right.
someone from Mexico. I mean, it's not one thing, but again, we make the mistake of basically speaking to people of color as if they're all monolith, you know, one thing, and do not understand that the attack of us being socialists is actually one that works with key members of the Hispanic community, right? There are other, so we've got to start from the get-go understanding that, no, people of color are not all the same. They don't, you know, we have to deal with these attacks and explain who, you know, who we are, what we're fighting for. And again, this is another one of those things where it's about class, not necessarily race or color. And I think we need to start again, when we were speaking more in those terms, I think we were able to hold the working class together across those lines. Now the Republicans have gotten very, very good at dividing and blaming, pointing at different groups and blaming those groups to keep them from joining each other is what I guess what I'm saying in terms of how they've kept us separated and who's spending the money right. to do that. It's a bunch of, you know, dark money people who like things, you know, like to get their way. And this is the best way for them to do it and get power.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and this is more of a messaging one, but the myth that I thought was really interesting, we got to bust, is that economics really does trump culture. And that's a total myth.
Yeah. Too many Democrats believe that economic issues are the real issues and that cultural issues are broad, you know, mostly diversions invented by their adversaries, you know, for political purposes. You know, it's easy to fall into that that trap, and we tend to walk right into it. Yeah. So Alex, another myth you wanted to talk about was economic trumps culture.
Yeah. Well, and it trumps the key word there. And this was really something in 2016 that he did really well, right? For years, Republicans kept the argument they would always give us is we could say they're going to cut your Medicare, they're going to cut your Medicaid, they're going to take away the programs you rely on. Well, Trump campaigned on a promise that he wasn't going to do it, which essentially took away all that ammo, which it really kind of reoriented a lot of voters on who was doing what on entitlement reform.
Yeah, it was smart and it worked. But, you know, it was that he removed, you know, a key obstacle to a cultural appeal. I mean, so his anti-immigrant and nationalism could be pushed back against because with, hey, but they're going to come and like they're doing now in their new agenda that they say isn't their agenda, which is to sunset Medicare, Social Security, et cetera. So they're putting it right there.
What do you think people are going to say sunset means? No, but, it's so obvious.
But my point is that he by removing the barrier of they're going to take my Medicare or that fear away, it let him by, you know, taking that fear away, because it was sort of two fears. Do I fear the Republicans taking my Medicare and Social Security and things I depend on away? Do I fear the immigrants and the people of color who that's why I'm being held back? Well, if you remove the fear of Medicare, you know, the attack on your on something you need and believe in, then it's easier to get you with the attack that you're getting screwed because you're white and these immigrants and people of color are stealing your jobs. And so there's two things that Democrats need to do. Well, one, the Republicans just did it again with their new agenda, which is to sunset end programs in 5 years, like Medicare, Social Security. Oh, they'll say, yeah, but we'll put them back. Yeah, we're going to end them so we can start them again, right? They weren't for starting them in the first place, and they've always been for ending them. So one, we have to continue to make that. But the other thing is, again, getting back to talking to them and making the argument that they're not being screwed because they're white, they're being screwed because they're working class voters, and the working class in this country is getting left behind by business, you know, and start to make that case. You can't make that case if you're saying no and holding those voters up with for scorn and saying, hey, they're not even worth talking to. Well, if they're not worth talking to and they're being told by Trump and the Republicans and the MAGA cult that we're all being screwed because we're white, and there's no counter to that, then, you know, that starts to be what this is the thing that we've suffered not addressing for way too long. That's what this report, this study actually lays out. And it's that we have to fight both what they're really doing, but also on the cultural, we have to engage in the culture war and make sure that people understand that they're being played. There are ways to do that if we can talk, if we can communicate and actually have a discussion and start talking to people that we haven't been talking to. If we continue to not talk to them or with them. And by the way, this is why I think Tim Ryan's such a great candidate in Ohio, because Tim Ryan does talk to these folks, gets it, and he is challenging them on taking on that you're being screwed because you're working class voter. You know, I'm from the working class, and he is. And I think it's that kind of candidate right now. That's what we're talking about, that bridges that cultural gap in a way that gets to enough of those swing voters, enough of these people who used to be in the Democratic coalition and working class voters were always the base of our party. We need to win that base back and make arguments that appeal to them. And by the way, that includes, these are people who, like all Americans, believe that crime is too high. And yes, we can be for reform in the criminal justice system, but we have to be pro law and order. They want, we need to speak in terms of, it's one thing to talk about more training for police, but we have to insist that we get that crime is real and we have to address it. And we have to be, it can't be just with policies that seem to be, we've got to forcefully take on arguments like defund the police, which just feed exactly into those fears that these voters have. And instead state strongly, the act of speaking out and saying, no, that we're not defunding the police, and then at the same time affirm what we are for, that we stand for law and order, and while there are reforms that we all need to work on, making our streets safe, putting more police on the streets, with better training is what where we, the Democratic Party, want to go. That's going to get, there'll be people screaming in our party, just as there are people who will scream from the right, but that's where we have to meet these voters, I think.
The report says something along the lines of, we need an honorable middle ground, right? And I think this is where you want to go, but Joe Biden's doing a really good job of this the last couple of weeks, especially on the police issue. I mean, getting up and saying in a speech, fund the police. I mean, now we just got to repeat it. But right. He did this with the party platform.
But that's
too, right?
But that's the whole point. They have an outrage machine that repeats the lie. We basically, we have Joe Biden at the State of the Union it has to be repeated from within the party. And there's got to be an understanding of what the stakes are right now. They're much greater than they were in 1992 when Bill Clinton took the party in a turn that reached a lot of those working class voters that had gone to, the Reagan Democrats that had gone to Reagan. A lot of enough of them came home that it was that we won and won a re-election with him. I think when you look at things like, yes, parents should have a say in their kids' education. Yes, I mean, these are all common sense kinds of things. Yes, more police with better training will make us, make us safer. These are the things we're for. And again, by taking them on, it removes part of the cultural gap that the Republicans have been able to build up, much in the same way that Trump took away attacks on Social Security and cutting Social Security and Medicare away. We have to take aggressive action on these cultural issues or social issues in a way that affirms where we and every American is. In other words, most Americans believe that more police with better training would be something that we should do. There may be people in the party who don't believe that, but that's fine. They're not, the country should get worried when they have they have the majority, right, of the party, not today, because that's what they do. They take
the 7% of the crazy.
Yeah, right. Somebody says something on both sides, but I mean, where we have about 7-8% of both parties, which is the next myth, I think, a progressive ascendancy is emerging. That's not the case. 7% of this electorate considers itself very liberal. And what you're seeing is that the 7 or 8% that is sort of hyper intense and it, you know, is the most active on Twitter, the most active on social media, probably are some of the most active and repetitive donors in the party. Very important. The same thing. I think it may be 8 or 9% on the Republican side of the most intense who are on social media, et cetera, you know, are more engaged. But, a lot of of us are living in, and we've heard everybody talking about, you know, people are living in two different bubbles. Well, those two groups definitely are, right? I mean, and the problem with that is it only take it, you know, with their outrage machine, they can jump on a defund the police, you know, by relatively few people, including not very many African Americans or Hispanics, were part of defund the police. We lose if we don't push back with what we are for and take away some of the wedges, and not give them wedges, but take them away from them. You know, they, in the report, I think they said that Democrats are living in a bubble defined by education, income, and geography. Time after time, Republicans use progressives' overreach in areas such as crime, immigration, education to drive wedges between swing voters and the Democratic Party. You know, you and I saw this in Alabama, where the brand was so poisoned. Those Republican women who, like, literally, and I've said it a lot of times on this podcast, you know, they could barely spit the word Democrat out because it was so
poisoned. Couldn't say the word. Yeah.
And so we sort of, you know, give them the ammo. They use it. And then we, you know, as they say in the report, this pattern will not end until Democrats break out of the mindset that dominates deep blue states, familiarize themselves with the rest of the country, and then carefully craft stances on these issues that move the country forward and that a majority of Americans can embrace. And this is, like, what I think is really important. We literally cannot win the Electoral College without winning places like Ohio and Iowa, and you know, whether it's Florida, Texas, none of these are easy places, but they're not going to be won by not talking to working class white Americans, and who were always with the Democratic Party. That's the thing that, you know, Doug Jones, his dad worked in the Fairfield Steel plant in Fairfield, Alabama. You know, that's where the party, you know, it came from the working class, and we're in failing to stand for common sense, including, by the way, patriotism. For example, right. I think, you know, I still, you know, have been waiting for Biden to say to the American people, "We'll pay any price, bear any burden to help preserve democracy in Ukraine and around the world." And to call on the patriotism of Americans as part of not just sending weapons and humanitarian aid, but also calling the American people to stand together, calling on their patriotism to stand together and support any way they can the effort, including, yes, it's going to be painful here. Not that isn't an excuse on inflation. I'm just saying it's something we're not very effective at, I think, and we need to be, because I think Americans would respond to that sense of love of country and patriotism and love of democracy as part of, yes, the other party is a threat to democracy, but somehow they're able to have put a wedge on patriotism itself, and we're not, supposedly. We don't love the country and aren't patriots. It's complete BS, but we don't assert back the other way. That's something we have to do. You know, parents do have a say in educating their kids. They must. We do love our country, you know, and the reason you're getting screwed isn't because you're white. It's because you're a working class person. And we're getting stepped on left and right. And it's the bit, you know, it's the money that fueled what's going on in the court right now and Roe v. Wade and all this stuff. It's all tied to who, it's not just who decides, but who owns the country. And right now, it's not working class people. We have to join together and fight this. Well, that's a different way to go than what we've been doing.
Right. Well, Joe, we're just about out of time, but I want to leave you with this stat. And this gets to how hard some of these swing states are. And this is from the report. White non-college voters in swing states comprise a significantly larger share of the electorate than Black and Hispanic voters combined, I think, except in Georgia and Texas.
Yes, that's right.
But the so
right, that, so a strategy that said, right, so a strategy that says, no, we'll just turn out more of our people, when, by the way, they're doing a better job of turning out more of theirs, misses the point. Yes, we have to do that, but we have to appeal to white working class voters, period.
Yep.
And it's to do it not by basically saying, well, if you're with them, you're racist. No, they're telling you you're screwed because you're white. That's not, and you know what they're doing that with a lot of money, dark money and everything else. It's to divide us, to keep working class people at each other's throats instead of joining together and making things better for working people. That's why Joe Biden is going to not raise taxes on anybody who makes less than $400,000 a year, and why they want to raise taxes now on you and everybody you know, 80 million Americans, because they don't think you have enough skin in the game. That's right. Your class. That's not race. You don't have enough skin in the game, so they want to tax you. Well, no, we're for working class people. We're trying to build a future, and you need to be with us, is a much better case than fighting over critical race theory or whatever culture thing they throw at us tomorrow to keep the class divided. That's what the case I think we need to start to make. I think people should read the report, the study. I think it's a little confusing, maybe, for us to go over it on this podcast. Hopefully we were able to get enough of it to you, but to understand, but you'll really get a good understanding of it, I think, if you actually download and read the report. It's very insightful. And it comes from two people, Elaine K. Mark and Bill Gostin, who both literally were there at the beginning with me when I was a young man working in the Mondale campaign back in 1984. They were right in 1989 or so with the first report. I think they're right today. And I think the progressive movement has to mature enough to read reports like this, understand what these people are talking about. They are progressives. They understand communications. They understand the numbers and how the Electoral College is stacked against us, and that either we win these voters and don't ignore them, don't talk past them, but make the case that we're the working class party that they should be with. With that, I think we're out of time. So thanks, everyone, for listening to That Trippy Show. We'll include a link to the PPI report in our show notes. We'll be back next week with more special guest episodes. And of course, please subscribe to That Trippy Show and leave a review on Apple or wherever you listen. You can always send us a question to thattrippyshow@gmail.com or leave us a question in the review on iTunes.